That was number 756. I've been a little bit remiss today. As everyone knows by now, we have a group, a special group of young folks with us from the AIM program. Those of you that are members of the congregation here are familiar with that program because we help assist, I think, one of the instructors there or someone who works with the AIM program. Sunset's, I don't even know what it's used to be, Sunset School of Preaching. It's what, School of International Bible Study now? What is it? Okay, International Bible School. It's been around for lots and lots of years. I have lots of respect for that school, for the instructors there. I know some of them. And I wish I had all the details. You can probably talk with some of these young people and they can give you a little more specific details, but a very high percentage of the people, preachers that are preaching in our brotherhood today, were trained at Lubbock, at the school there, and an even higher percentage of missionaries that we send out have been trained at that school. I don't know that I can say this with accuracy, but I think it's probably the longest running school that we have in our brotherhood. If it's not, it certainly is right up there with any that may be have been going that long. Turned out lots and lots of really good preachers. This AIM program is Adventures in Missions, and young people can choose to attend the school there for 5 or 6 months. You can get the specific details. I should have gotten them all from them, but 5 or 6 months, and then they go out, and now they go out as a team. We have one of those teams with us. They have been here this week, came in this past Monday, and have been with us all week. And let me say that they probably got cheated a little bit this week because the preacher normally knows what he's doing here, and this preacher is new and kind of feeling around the walls, and so was not really familiar with any role that I probably should have played in their being here. But I did have the opportunity to be with them on a couple of occasions and very much enjoyed and appreciate these young people. And I would like to introduce them to you. And lest I forget to say, some of them are still looking for support. And so if you know of a congregation somewhere or individuals who might be able to help them, I know that they would very deeply appreciate that. They've essentially finished their schooling now. They're going back to school for some last exercises, and then they will go out and try to complete raising the funds that they need. And they will be going to Port Elizabeth, South Africa, and I think in June, is that right? Be leaving and going there in June for 2 years. So it's really an outstanding program, and let me give you their names, and if I mispronounce a name, then please forgive me. Sasha Chalco, Victor Howard, Mike Katkus, Diana McAdams, Tara Rowan, Nisha Smith, and Tyler Wilson. And if you would like to know where they're from, there is they brought some brochures, a prayer list for AIM. They have some out here on the table, so pick one up. Make sure that you meet them. I'd like to ask them to stand so that you can see who they are. And okay, thank you. We have enjoyed your being here. And by the way, if you notice the flower beds have been mulched, they did it. So we have been the recipients in more than one way. Also, I don't know all the things that they've done. I do know that they went to Impact and worked one day. Hopefully, they've had a little fun while they've been here, and we've enjoyed having them and wish them Godspeed. We have been... And on Sunday evenings, looking at a series of lessons on doubt, we've been examining the role that doubt plays in our faith And most specifically, in why, in many cases, our faith never reaches a mature, stable level. We've talked about ingratitude, faulty view of God, weak foundations, lack of true commitment, and how each one of these gives rise to doubt in their own way. And at this level, after commitment has come, faith doesn't die quickly. Prior to this, at least in some of the earlier stages, before we reach a point of real conviction in our life, faith can die rather quickly. I mean, in its fledgling stages, then something can come up, just almost anything, and it will interrupt that journey on our way to faith. But once we've reached that level of commitment, then faith doesn't die quickly. It dies rather subtly. And so tonight we're going to be talking about doubt that comes from lack of growth. Living is faith's reality test. Everything that happens in this life, for us as Christians, every incident, every experience, every happening, challenges your faith for an interpretation. Your faith has to be able to handle it, whatever it is. It may be a new teaching that somebody brings to you. It may be something that happens in your life, excuse me, that challenges your faith. And you have to decide. It will be decided. Is your faith larger than this particular thing? Or does this overrun your faith? Is this bigger than your faith? Can you cope with it? Can your faith handle it? Can it provide a satisfactory explanation? Or will this new experience undermine your faith and take it away from you? Cut the legs out from under it. Is it proving too much for it? If faith is to continue to motivate a person to grow to total commitment, then it has to answer each challenge individually, and it has to answer it satisfactorily. There are some people who continue to operate even though their faith has been undermined. Maybe because we don't want to disappoint family. Maybe because there are people that we look up to who believe this, and so we just act like we believe it, and we keep going. But our faith dies, and we're just a shell. We're not really, really operating out of conviction. And we need to understand that whatsoever is not of faith is what? Sin. That's pretty serious. Our faith must continue to grow until we die. We're on a journey of growing our faith. And so long as faith rises to the occasion and answers the challenge, it grows stronger and stronger and more assured, and we have less and less doubt as time goes on in our lives. Once our faith has overcome some really serious difficulties and proven that it's big enough to handle that, and our, if you will, our theology is big enough that we can handle things that happen in this life and it doesn't take our faith away from us, then we have less and less struggle with doubt in our lives. But if faith hesitates, and if it doesn't rise to the occasion and it falters, or if it shows the slightest sign of retreat, then doubt rushes in. It's always there. Waiting, 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 just for a crack in the armor, just for an opportunity to come in. And we begin to think, well, maybe this whole thing is just a philosophy. Maybe the world is just too different today from what it was in the first century. And maybe this faith is outdated and outmoded, and it really doesn't fit the needs of modern man. It just doesn't work in everyday life, or these principles won't work in the business world, and on and on and on we can go. Christianity is not true because it works. But if you do not put it to work, then doubt undermines its truthfulness. It's not something that you can just reach a plateau and you can hold on to this. Because you can't. You have to put it to work because life continues to happen, doesn't it? And things happen in our life that our faith must get around, must be able to handle. And if that faith doesn't continue to grow, then we're going to lose it. And doubt, arises naturally because truth, this unpracticed, becomes impractical. You know, I think that if Christianity has fallen on hard times, and I will say it's a fairly self-evident truth that it has, it's because not enough of us are living our faith. And people hear what we say, but do they see it in our lives? Do they see us with this fierceness about our faith, this intensity about what we believe and about Jesus Christ? Do they see in us something that attracts them rather than just having the fellowship that we have within the church? But you see, the key to this problem is simple. Christians don't so much lose our faith as we cease to use our faith. And when we cease to use it, then it becomes just theory. And it's not really practical. It ceases to be practical in our life because we don't use it. And we begin to stand still, we become indecisive, we drift, and soon we find ourselves in inactivity. And we're just coming and getting our card punched and going home. The consequential doubt is subtle because it's so, so very gradual. Faith is finally laid aside courteously, with regrets, maybe even a little bit apologetically, but the indictment is there. Faith that does not work will be discarded. You can watch it die. Charles Darwin wrote an autobiography, and I quote, "I gradually came to disbelieve Christianity as a divine revelation. Disbelief crept over me at a very slow rate, but was at last complete. The rate was so slow that I felt no distress, and have never since doubted, even for a single second, that my conclusion was correct." I wonder how many Darwins in practice we have among us, that it just gradually happens, because if you're not using it, then the intensity wears off of it, and we begin to replace it with other things. What would you think of a man who gave up learning to ride a bicycle because he complained that he hurt himself because his bicycle stopped moving and he had no choice but to fall off? Well, that's kind of the way faith is. If it's not moving, you're going to fall off. It is something that is alive. It's something that must continue to grow. If you want to sit comfortably somewhere while remaining stationary, then you better find a chair, not a bicycle, because it won't work. Faith is that way. Faith must be in use or it becomes useless. C.S. Lewis observed, "If you examined 100 people who had lost their faith in Christianity, I wonder how many of them would turn out to have reasoned out of it by honest argument. Do not most people simply drift away?" I think that's the case, don't you? Those who leave, in order to justify that leaving, they'll throw dust up in the air. They'll put a lot of smoke up. But that's really not the problem. Very, very, very rarely is it an intellectual problem. It's almost always a moral problem. And that moral problem will cause us, and I'm not just talking about sexual immorality, I'm just talking about morality in general. That immorality that we find ourselves becoming involved in this world will rob us of our faith. It'll cause us to be inactive. And it will replace, in a very real sense, the faith that we once had. A graphic illustration, I think, is found in Revelation chapter 3, the church at Sardis. It says, "These are the words of him who holds the seven spirits of God, the seven stars. I know your deeds. You have a reputation of being alive, but you're dead." Under the penetrating scrutiny of Jesus, the difference between actual and apparent and reality and reputation is all too obvious. We can have a reputation. We can have a reputation of being alive. But Jesus, in scrutinizing that church there, said, "You look like you're alive. You have the reputation of being alive. But in reality, you're dead." He knew that that seeming peace that was in that church was in reality a sleep that would soon lead to death. You know, if you're looking for peace, one of the most peaceful places that you can find is, guess where? Cemetery. But it's also dead there. Interestingly enough, the church there at Sardis mirrored something of the history of the city itself. Sardis was constructed on a 1,500-foot high cliff. It was regarded as impregnable. But twice in its history, it had fallen. Not because of the strategy of a superior army, but simply because they had been so overconfident that they had been caught with their defenses unmanned. And the church there was self-confident, enjoying their reputation, careless about putting their faith to work, and so they were drifting and in danger of dying, he said. So, what was their solution? First of all, realize that a living faith is based in a relationship. It's not just about knowing things. I'm pretty big about knowing things. Lots of us are pretty big about knowing things. But it's not just about knowing things. It is a relationship. It is a living relationship. And every relationship has to be nurtured and cherished and fostered, doesn't it? Friendships. How many of us have friends that we haven't contacted for many, many years? We can still call them friends, and in a sense, they still are. But they're really not practicing friends. How about a marriage relationship that nobody puts any effort into? What's going to happen to it? That relationship's going to die, isn't it? Faith begins by learning. Faith comes by hearing. But it's continued by putting it into practice. And that leads to the second aspect of the solution, and that is we have to put it to work. If you're really serious about having faith and coming to faith, then you've got to put your faith to work. You can't just know and put a cage around it and expect it to live. It'll die. Stretch it. Put it to the test. See if you can wear it out, because you can't. Not real faith. It just grows stronger and stronger the more it's used. And this is a challenge that makes a difference. Faith must mean everything today, or some tomorrow it will mean nothing. It must be the thing that we give our life in pursuit of. To learn to trust God as we've never done before. To learn to walk where we've never gone before. To accept challenges that we've never accepted before. To do things that we don't feel capable of doing, to stretch that faith, to teach someone, to teach a Bible class, to do something, not just to sit and learn and listen, but to put that faith to work. Faith is not a thing that somebody loses. We just one day slowly drift away and we cease to have our lives shaped by our faith. And it becomes ideal and not practical. In 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, "Examine yourselves to see if you're living the life of faith. Test yourself," it says. And so the question is faith real? And we know the interesting thing is these kind of doubts are really subtle. The ones on the front edge as you're coming to faith, those are pretty obvious. Is there a God? Is Jesus Christ the Son of God? Did Jesus really perform miracles? Does the Holy Spirit really live in us? And all kind of things that are pretty obvious. But this level of doubt is much more subtle. And sometimes we don't even recognize it as doubt. It's just that it happens so slowly that our faith becomes something that's not real. It becomes something that's just ideal. It becomes something that's not living in our lives. It doesn't shape our lives. We don't continue to grow and do things that we've never done before. And so is your faith real? Is it usable? Is it practical? If not, then it's going to die. You can't just hold your ground wherever you are. Revelation chapter 3, verse 2 and 3, he gave them the answer, this church at Sardis. He said, "You have the reputation of being alive, but you're dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die. For I have not found your deeds complete in the sight of my God. Remember, therefore, what you have received and heard. Obey it and repent. But if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you'll not know at what time I will come to you." Wake up. Wake up. Because these people were very likely looking for something new and exciting. But he said, you know, that's not what you need. What you need is to put into action what you have heard, obey it, and repent. It's not always looking for something new out there. It is putting into action what you know the Lord has said. And so our question for tonight regarding our faith in this particular lesson is aimed at us as Christians. Your faith can die. It happens. I hope it doesn't happen as much as sometimes it appears to. But it can happen to every single one of us if we don't put our faith into action. And so tonight, the question for me and you is, as we look inside ourselves, do we need the Lord to come knocking on our door and say, wake up and put what you know to work in your life? Otherwise, what looks like it's alive is going to die in you. Let's stand and sing.